Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. After lung cancer, prostate cancer is the second most common cause of cancer death in U.S. men. So screening and early detection sounds like a good idea. A screen called prostate-specific antigen test has been fairly routine for about 15 years, but an influential federal panel has just come out against screening, saying, among other things, that it may only help 1 in 1,000 men avoid death from prostate cancer. The recommendations of the U.S. Preventive Service Task Force are controversial, and we will discuss them during this hour. Joining us are two doctors who come in on different sides of this issue. In studio with us is Dr. Leonard Gumella. He is Bernard Godwin Professor of Prostate Cancer and Chairman of the Department of Urology at Thomas Jefferson University and the Kimmel Cancer Center. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Gumella.
Happy to be here today. Thank you.
And on the phone, we have Dr. Daniel Mirenstein. He is Associate Professor and Director of Research Programs in the Department of Family Medicine at Georgetown University Medical Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here also. Thank you.
And we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about these new recommendations about screenings and tests and what should be, what you should or should not do? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Dr. Gumella, I've mentioned the recommendations that came out this week by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. What exactly did they recommend?
Well, what the task force recommended was that no man in the United States without symptoms should be screened for prostate cancer. They made a very broad brush statement here and really dismissed a lot of important information that's out there when it comes to counseling patients about screening for prostate cancer and an individual man's risk of the disease.
And we'll get to some of those in a moment. Dr. Mirenstein, when recommendations like that come out, what happens next? What kind of impact do they have?
Well, unfortunately, we know it takes about 10 years for physicians to change their practice pattern. So it's probably not going to have an impact this week or in the next probably 6 to 12 months. But it does have a potential for a big impact due to the new healthcare law and I think due to all the press it's getting. So hopefully it might produce some changes earlier than that.
You say hopefully because you are obviously in favor of these recommendations, and we'll get to all that in a moment. Does it have any impact on how health insurance companies reimburse for testing?
Well, theoretically it can. In the new healthcare law, if it stays as is, when the task force ranks it as a D, healthcare providers do not have to cover it anymore. Now, a lot of states have gone on and changed the laws and said, you know, specifically prostate cancer screening and some things like mammography at age 40 do need to be covered. But it potentially could change how people cover it, yes.
And Dr. Mirenstein, I'll give you a chance to weigh in a second, but I want to ask Dr. Gumella to explain to us, how does this test work? How is it done?
Well, basically, screening for prostate cancer involves traditionally a blood test with or without a rectal exam. The American Cancer Society says the rectal exam is optional, but other large organizations such as the American Urologic Association feel that the rectal exam is an important part of the screening. If there is a marked elevation in the PSA test or an abnormality is felt on the prostate, then further testing is recommended, and that usually involves a prostate biopsy. Very important for the listeners to understand, a PSA and a rectal exam as a screening test do not diagnose prostate cancer. They just indicate a man who may be at increased risk of having the disease and then allows the physician to interact with the patient and recommend additional testing to make the diagnosis.
And what are they looking for in the blood?
Well, in the blood, that gets a little bit tricky because it used to be an absolute number. The number used to be 4. 4 was the normal. Well, as we've learned over the years, as we gain experience with this important blood test, we know that changes in the PSA over time are much more important than an individual number unless that number is very high. So changes in PSA are probably more important than the individual PSA number itself.
So, Dr. Mirenstein, that all sounds like a good idea when you're listening to it. Why do you think these screens are not necessary?
Yeah, well, it's not really my opinion. I think it's the facts. I think it's the data. But the first thing we need to talk about is it's a great test for some things, as Dr. Miller was saying. When you have people with symptoms or people with prostate cancer, and that's how it was supposed to be used, it's a great test to follow that. And then you need to look at the elevation, you need to follow it. So it is a great test for that. But what I think we're pretty much talking about today is for people who are healthy, primary prevention. And it really just hasn't been shown to help. The few of the negative things about it is about 20% of people will be told they have a normal PSA, and we know that they have cancer. So they're walking around being told they have a normal PSA. Hopefully they'll come back and look for symptoms, but they might not because they think they have a normal PSA, and they don't. And then even worse than that is that we're treating people unnecessarily and causing lots of damage.
Dr. Gamella, how often was this test typically done?
Well, again, the test is typically done in a personal interaction between the physician and their patient, and this is one of the grave concerns that we have, that this will not allow patients to have an informed discussion with their physician if this goes through as a full recommendation in the Affordable Care Act. And to make a broad-based statement that PSA is not a good test, and to make a broad-based statement that all men suffer complications from treatment and do not derive benefit is grossly unfair to the American public, and in particular, African Americans who suffer a high burden from this disease.
How often would men, sorry, one question, how would men get tested frequently, or was this once every 5 years?
Again, the recommendations are changing, and this is one of the things the task force really didn't give a lot of credit to. Most of the data that they cited were before 2008. We've learned a lot. It used to be an annual recommendation. Now, based on your age, your risk factors, your race, it is now as much as every 5 years, particularly for younger men who have certain levels of PSA. Traditionally, once we hit a 10-year life expectancy, or if a man has a lot of comorbidity, we don't strongly recommend screening the asymptomatic man for prostate cancer.
And Dr. Mayerstein, sorry, you were
I just wanted to give some numbers. We talk because, you know, when you talk to patients about it, I think that the easiest thing is to talk about numbers. And a lot of people say, well, you know, there was two major studies. One study showed no positive outcome of the test. The other study showed some positive outcomes. And the numbers that proponents like to use is a 20% relative risk reduction. But the actual numbers, I think, mean a lot more to patients. And what they actually found is, for every 1,400 men you screen for 10 years, so you need to screen them for 10 years, and you spare one of those, 50 will have prostate cancer. One of the 50 will be spared a death in the next 10 years. 49 of them will be treated unnecessarily. And then we can talk about all the side effects of the 49. But that really, I think, makes sense to patients. So 1,400 men need to be screened for 10 years for one to have it prevent a death. 49 need to be treated unnecessarily.
And how much does this test cost?
The test expense is very little for, you know, the blood test itself. Dr. Mello probably knows more than me, but I would think probably $25 to $30. But then you need to talk about the biopsies and all the follow-up with it.
So you're more concerned that the test itself is not expensive, but then the test leads to false positives, and then it leads to men being treated who do not need to be treated. Dr. Mayerstein, is that correct?
Yeah, with significant morbidity, with serious problems of incontinence and impotence and lots of life-changing problems.
All right. I think before we get to that, I want to understand something about prostate cancer, because on the one hand, it looks like a deadly cancer. And then when you read about it, it also sounds like a cancer that can be very slow growing and can be really not a big problem. So can you clarify that for us, Dr. Gamella?
Well, let's clarify the fact that prostate cancer is the second leading cancer cause of death in men in the United States. The leading cause of death is lung cancer. Prostate cancer is right behind this. So this is not a toothless tiger.
Right.
This is a cancer that is affecting a lot of men. The other problem that we're facing is, as men are not dying of cardiovascular disease and living longer and longer, the chance they're going to develop prostate cancer goes up dramatically. Now, the important question and the challenge that we have with screening for prostate cancer is the fact that many men will develop what we call autopsy, or clinically unimportant cancers that do not need to be treated. And the estimates vary somewhere between 60 to 80% of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer do not need to be treated because they are not life-threatening cancers. Where the argument falls apart is the fact the only way to pick up the men who have the life-threatening cancers and offer them appropriate treatment is through the PSA test. And what is happening in the field that the Preventive Services Task Force did not give proper credit to, when we focus on all of the complications and we scare people with incontinence and impotence and death and everything else, is the fact that we are learning now to do something called active surveillance and more conservatively manage men with observation alone without what we call active treatment who have low-risk autopsy cancer.
What does active treatment look like?
Active treatment generally falls into two large categories: some form of surgical treatment of prostate cancer removal, or some type of radiation, and there's many out there.
And is the surgery where the problems come in with incontinence or
any treatment for prostate cancer can cause complications. But the reality is, if you look at the data that was not looked at by the Preventive Services Task Force and the incidence of these complications, they have dropped dramatically with improvements in both surgical technique and radiation techniques over the last 20 years.
And Dr. Merenstein, who is on this task force to give these recommendations? Who's represented?
Yeah, so it's on it's about well based on representation. There's on epidemiologists and primary care physicians that understand evidence and people that really that deal with prevention, because this is a prevention question. It's not a question of, you know, once they have cancer. And just to add one quick thing, active treatment is a great way to go, but the data shows that 90% of people don't pick that they actually do surgery or radiation. And when Dr. Gamella made an excellent point about, you know, the 10-year survival, but most people who die from prostate cancer are well in their 80s. So really the question we're dealing with and what the question task force is dealing with is, do people in their 40s and 50s and 60s need to get a PSA test and be treated? And the data is clear they don't know, not need that.
And in due respect to Dr. Merenstein, this is not about preventing prostate cancer. This is about identifying patients who have prostate cancer who are at risk from dying from prostate cancer. The task force chose to ignore extensive literature out there that says if you are a young, healthy man, and you are screened for prostate cancer versus men who are treated with observation alone, you dramatically reduce your risk of dying or suffering morbidity from prostate cancer. The problem that we're dealing with is the broad-based recommendations, and that's not what medicine's all about. We are sitting here in Independence Mall right now where you should have the independent opportunity to discuss the risks and benefits with your physician of this screening test and make an informed decision. And to have this rule out there saying no man at any time should be screened is doing a great disservice to all of us.
Dr. Merenstein, do you want to weigh in on this before we go to break?
You know, I think it's important that if you do have this discussion as a urologist or as a family doctor, that you go back to the 1,400 men, because that's what people understand. So what other things that Dr. Gamella is talking about is really just noise, because it really is not the data. The data shows that you need to screen 1,400 men for 10 years, and that's the one positive study. The other study wasn't even positive. Most men are going to die with their prostate cancer, not from their prostate cancer. Let's not cause more damage than we need to.
And Dr. Merenstein, in due respect, Newt Gingrich took a lot of grief last fall, Speaker of the House, when he was presidential candidate, who said there were no medical specialists on that panel that actually treated patients with prostate cancer. There was no urologist, no medical oncologist, no radiation oncologist who every day has to go to work and face the devastation and the 30,000 men a year that die from prostate cancer. So the basis is we are working towards having men understanding the concept of active surveillance and to make a broad recommendation. You, as a family practice doctor, primary care doctor, probably recommend cholesterol-lowering agents. When you look at the relative risk of saving death from that, it's extraordinarily low, much less than some of our positive screening studies we've shown.
Okay, Dr. Merenstein, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that, but right now we have to take a short break. That was the voice of Dr. Leonard Gamella, who is chairman of the Department of Urology at Thomas Jefferson University. Also joining us on the phone, Dr. Daniel Merenstein, associate professor and director of research at Georgetown University Medical Center. We'll be right back. Give us a call to weigh in at 1-888-477-9499. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Focus Features, presenting the new film Moonrise Kingdom, directed by Wes Anderson and starring Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, and Tilda Swinton. Moonrise Kingdom, in select theaters now.
WHYY is proudly supported by the new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro. This new hospital is now open. It was designed with all single-patient rooms and innovations that may help improve healing and lower infections. Features include a rapid response emergency room and physicians from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia to care for children. The new University Medical Center of Princeton at Plainsboro, redefining care. Now open. More at princetonhcs.org.
Hey everybody, Jad here. I wanted to let you know that Radiolab is coming soon to Philadelphia for a live show. We're calling it In the Dark, and it's all about darkness and light, seeing, believing. It's going to be a super fun night because we've got the comedian Dimitri Martin coming with us, the singer-songwriter Tao Nguyen, and the amazing dance troupe Palabolas. They'll all be there. We'll be there June 29th at the Academy of Music. You can get tickets at radiolab.org.
Chestnut Hill College takes a holistic approach designed to inspire a passion of learning and a rewarding educational experience. The Chestnut Hill College School of Graduate Studies. Chestnut Hill College supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain. We're talking about new guidelines on prostate cancer screenings with Jefferson University's Dr. Leonard Gomela and Dr. Daniel Merenstein of Georgetown University Medical Center. Daniel Merenstein, I told you you would have a chance to weigh in on...
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, when you don't like the message or the facts, they attack the messenger, and that's really what Newt Gingrich did and what Dr. Gomela just did. The task force is independent. They have no financial incentives, unlike the Urology Association, and they came to this conclusion, and they and I see patients dying of prostate cancer and colon cancer just as other doctors do. I would rather that I spend our resources convincing patients to get colon cancer screening or mammography, things that have been shown to work, rather than doing these PSA fairs and continuing to talk about PSA when really we should be talking about why isn't there a better test out there? Why we've been putting all these resources for 20 years in a test that we've known for 20 years is a failure.
And Dr. Gomela, the researcher who developed this test has actually come out supporting these guidelines, saying that the test has not been used correctly.
Well, that's fair. The test may have not been used correctly, but it's the best test we have right now to help men avoid the morbidity and death from prostate cancer. You know, and that's the problem with this whole argument. It becomes very vitriolic. People pick one little thing that they want to look at. What Dr. Merenstein's not telling you when he says 1,400 men need to be screened to avoid one prostate cancer death, and he talks about the benefits of mammography, what he's not telling you is that 1,400 to 1,900 women need to be screened with mammography to prevent one death.
And,
so,
and Dr. Merenstein, I want to ask you, because I guess this is how consumers like myself often look at it, I'm thinking, well, if it takes 1,400 men to save the one guy, and the one guy is my husband, yeah, then I'm all in favor of that.
No, and I totally agree with that. That's why I just think we need to present the facts to the patients. The problem with prostate cancer screening versus mammography is fortunately, mammography is not as, the morbidity is not as high, so there's not as much downside. But the 49 of the 50 have serious issues. You know, 30 to 50% of them have incontinence and impotence. Now, you're right. If that's what you want to go for, then that's what you should have. So I do think you still need to have a discussion with the patient, but you need to present the facts the right way. And let's just one quick thing. The American Cancer Society also endorses this. Their chief medical officer agrees with this recommendation.
And Dr. Gomela, how would you like to see this test used? If it was up to you, who would you test, when, and how?
And when Dr. Merenstein says the American Cancer Society agrees with this recommendation because the chief medical officer, Dr. Otis Brawley, agrees with this recommendation, is not representative of the American Cancer Society. The American Cancer Society is currently having internal discussions exactly how they're going to respond to this, so I don't think that that's true. At this point, the American Cancer Society as a group has not endorsed this. One of the people, the Otis Brawley, has supported these, but also Dr. Brawley has been very vitriolic against screening for prostate cancer over the years.
But let me ask you, if it were up to you, who would you test? When, at what age, how would you use this tool?
Well, the first thing we need to do is look at the data that says who benefits the most. The patients who benefit the most is not the 85-year-old man who has multiple comorbidities. The man who benefits the most is the young man in his 40s, 40 to 45 years of age, who is African-American and who has a very strong family history of prostate cancer, is otherwise in excellent health. Data has shown that these are the patients that derive the most benefit. The problem with the two major screening studies that people like Dr. Merenstein like to go back and talk about, evidence-based medicine, is the fact that, number one, these trials were designed over 10 years ago, and they were very broad-based trials. When you take data from these trials, number one, one of the trials that was negative was severely contaminated by men going to, as Dr. Merenstein says, health fairs, getting PSA, being diagnosed with prostate cancer, and being pulled out of the study. The problem with the European study is that the screening was done once every 4 years in many cases. But regardless of that, the European study still did show a 20% reduction in mortality from prostate cancer.
So you wouldn't want to see everybody screened, but you want to see specific patients screened?
Absolutely not. We are in this as a tertiary referral center at the Kimmel Cancer Center at Thomas Jefferson University. We're in the position where patients come to us usually diagnosed with prostate cancer, or they come to us with a question, should they have a biopsy or should they not have a biopsy? And in spite of being accused as a urologist, urologic surgeon who is some type of person out there only to do procedures on people. The bottom line is we try to counsel patients to the best of our ability. And I can tell you that about 30% of my patients that we see with prostate cancer right now, at a minimum, we're encouraging them to go on active surveillance. We're not encouraging them to undergo active treatment. And that's something that people need to understand.
Let's have our callers weigh in. We have Lisa joining us from Warminster. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you. I have a personal story where this PSA test caused my father's death. In 1991, he was a healthy 68-year-old man. He got the PSA test, and it wasn't at a fair. It was a doctor associated with Pennsylvania Hospital, the second best urologist in the area, recommended that he have his prostate removed. As a result, he died from a complication of surgery. So I feel very strongly that this test robbed our family of our father, and I am strongly on the side of the doctor that recommends against it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. But again, we're not talking about the test. We're talking about, in Lisa's case, a procedure that followed after the father had the test. Dr. Marenstein,
yeah,
you go first.
And I'm sorry to hear that, Lisa, but that's what happens. That's the story. And unfortunately, because there's such proponents out there in these fairs that places like Jefferson and Georgetown run, we screen people that are 68, which Dr. Gumilla started at the beginning of his conversation, said we shouldn't be screening these people. But we are, because that gets lost in all the noise of how good of a test this is, and really shouldn't be screening these people.
But Dr. Marenstein, just because I had the screen doesn't mean I need to have surgery, and it doesn't mean that my doctor will recommend surgery, correct?
No, that's true. But if you have a screen and it's positive, the PSA is a high level, then they're going to recommend a biopsy. And then we know that if they think that's cancer, and I hope Dr. Gumilla is right that this is changing slowly, but the data shows that 90% of people then go to surgery. You just need to think about it. If a doctor tells you have cancer, and you can just watch and wait it, or you can actually take it out, I think the general public says, let's just take it out and be done with it.
I'll give you a chance to respond in 1 second, Dr. Gumilla. But on some level, Daniel Marenstein, it seems to me like we're blaming the test for the results. So we're taking away the tests because we don't like what happens after the results, but the test itself doesn't seem to me like on some level, the test is not to blame, or am I misunderstanding this?
Well, the test is just giving unuseful information. So sometimes it's saying you don't have cancer, forget about it, when you really do have cancer, and then it's saying you have a cancer, which you might not have a cancer. Even if you have a cancer, you don't need to be treated. So the test is giving a new social rating. And I don't think we're taking away the test. I don't think anyone's saying that it should be illegal to produce the test. The test is going to be there. We just think, and I think we agree with this, that patients should be informed correctly given the real data.
All right, Dr. Gumilla.
Yeah, we have no doubt that we need a better test than PSA. But PSA is currently the best test that we have to identify men who are at risk from dying from prostate cancer. And the bottom line of this discussion is that too much has been focused on the complications and treatment. Dan said that 90% of men who are diagnosed with prostate cancer go on to surgery. That's a truly false number. That's not what it is. Men choose to be treated with various forms of radiation, cryotherapy, other forms of treatment are out there. So not all men choose to have a surgical procedure.
Let's take another.
I meant 90% don't choose watchful waiting.
All right, watchful waiting.
Thank you.
All right, let's take another call. We have Bill joining us from Chester County. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, this is Bill from Chester County. I just wanted to call in and represent the people that one of the doctors was indicating was perfect for this PSA test. My father died at age 66 of prostate cancer, so I had that family element, and I was mindful of that. My personal physician, family physician, based on an annual digital rectal exam, and in combination with the other tool of a PSA test, recommended that I get a biopsy, which I did, which proved that I did have cancer, and I successfully had it surgically removed 10 years ago. And I feel like the PSA played a critical part in my current good health, at least in regards to the prostate cancer.
Dr. Gumilla.
Again, Bill, thank you for calling in. You made an informed decision, and hopefully when you met with your doctor, you're the type of guy with a family history who has an increased risk of suffering from prostate cancer and ultimately dying from prostate cancer. In fact, the three most common factors that we have for high-risk prostate cancer are having a family history, having a highly elevated PSA or positive rectal exam, or being African American. And those, that's what we have to work towards, targeting the best people to screen, not a blanket don't screen or screen everybody, but targeted and focused screening, as organizations such as the American Urologic Association are trying to get that message out.
And Dr. Merenstein, is that something you could sign on to?
You know, I could. I just think if we hadn't spent the last 20 years on the PSA, we would have already had a test that we could all agree to. But unfortunately, we've been having health fairs for 20 years promoting PSA.
And I can tell Dr. Merenstein, I every day go to work, and we're working on all sorts of blood tests and different imaging strategies and everything else, and it's just not that simple. That's the best we have today is the PSA.
Dr. Leonard Gamello, how can you distinguish between an aggressive form of prostate cancer and one that might just sit there?
Mika, that's a great question, and that's where the PSA helps us a lot. PSA can be viewed like a smoke alarm in your upstairs bedroom. Just because it goes off, it doesn't mean there's a fire there, but it does bring your attention to the area. Unfortunately, at the present time, the only way we can differentiate the aggressive life-threatening cancer from the indolent non-life-threatening cancers is through a prostate biopsy. We have to look at it under the microscope and actually see the nature of the cancer cells. The exciting news is that we are working on other tests right now. There's a new urine test out there that looks for cancer cells in the urine that is getting some attention right now that we're doing more and more work with. But the bottom line is, in 2012, the only way we can diagnose prostate cancer is through a biopsy of the prostate.
Let's take another call. We have Jim joining us from Radnor. Hi, Jim. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I have prostate cancer. It was diagnosed through use of the PSA, which gradually increased. I had biopsies to confirm that I had cancer. The Gleason score was 6, so I opted for surgery. And afterwards, it was aggressive enough that I had to have follow-up radiation to get rid of it. And I just don't understand why the PSA isn't a logical test. To me, maybe the test is not properly used by everyone, but that doesn't mean you don't take kids' temperatures to see whether they have infections just because you overuse antibiotics. To me, the argument is similar, and I just don't understand it.
All right, let's have Dr. Daniel Merenstein weigh in on this. Thank you, Jim, for your call.
Yeah, well, I mean, unfortunately, you know, people have been sold this bill, and it's hard to talk about it. And it's hard in our society to talk about, you know, is prevention of cancer actually causing more harm. We have blood tests out there for colon cancer, for prostate, for ovarian cancer that no one talks about because the data is clear that they're not useful. Somehow this prostate one got used incorrectly, as you said, even by the person who invented it incorrectly, and now it's out there and people believe it's changing things, and the data just says it doesn't.
But Dr. Merenstein, what would you suggest, and I know you're not a urologist, but what do you think works in terms of screening men for this form of cancer and making sure that it doesn't progress to a way where it can't be treated?
Well, I think, unfortunately, just as women have to deal with ovarian cancer or pancreatic cancer for both sexes, we don't have a good screening test for it, and that's really the shame. They can look for some symptoms, but as Dr. Gamello knows, it's usually too late by then. So, unfortunately, we have this PSA test, and it hasn't been shown. Now, hopefully, as Dr. Mel said, new research will, you know, show some tweaks to it, and we can find a test that really works. But right now, we don't. Just like a lot of other cancers, we don't have a good prevention test for lung cancer, ovarian cancer, a whole list of cancers. Prostate's one of them.
Dr. Gamello?
What Dr. Merenstein keeps going back is what the anti-prostate cancer screening groups always go back to, these two large randomized clinical trials that were concocted 10 to 15 years ago, many good things about him, many bad things about him. We keep saying the PSA is not a good test. The PSA is a very good test used appropriately. For example, the PSA has allowed us to find earlier and earlier stages of cancer. When you use PSA and you diagnose a cancer based on PSA, the man is less likely to have positive lymph nodes and less likely to have disease outside of his prostate. So we have many benefits to PSA screening. Again, when you apply it across the board and you make these broad brush statements about it, I agree, PSA is not a great test. But when you look at targeted use of the PSA, it helps us dramatically. I do not want to go back to the day when I was a resident in the 1980s where 90% of men that we diagnosed with prostate cancer walked in with untreatable metastatic disease and died a short time later. Now, the good news and the bad news is that men are being diagnosed much earlier and perhaps being treated too aggressively. And that's the next phase that we need to move to, and in fact, we are moving to as a specialty of radiation oncology and urology who primarily treat these patients.
And Dr. Gumela, what do you think, what do you fear will happen because of these new guidelines? Do you think the test will just go away and not be done in a targeted fashion, or what's your fear?
Well, as Dr. Merenstein suggested, it's going to take a while before the actual implications of this, and whether or not the Affordable Care Act, if it stands up, the legal challenge will force this, might change this whole discussion. But essentially, if this test goes away, we're going to move back to a time when men, as I mentioned, presented with high-grade untreatable cancers, which is a real shame. And I think any patient who has had a relative die from prostate cancer knows that this is not a toothless tiger and really does harm men at the spectrum. I mean, very famous people, Frank Zappa, a very young man, Dan Fogelberg, in their early 50s, died from prostate cancer. I'm not saying we could have done anything to prevent it, but we got to get away from this concept that old men die from prostate cancer. It affects young men as well.
Dr. Merenstein?
Yeah, well, the problem with talking about it is that Dr. Mel is implying that we could do something, but we know that we can't prevent those deaths in the 40s and 50s. The data is clear about that. It couldn't be more clear that that's one of the main drawbacks of it, that we're not detecting these ones that we can really change at early age.
But we're not. But Dr. Merenstein, to be fair, the screening right now is not moving to that younger man. The screening has traditionally been for the older man. The data has clearly shown in countries with PSA screening in men with good characteristics, healthy men under the age of 65, that prostate cancer deaths can be dramatically reduced through PSA screening. And that data is out there, and I'm happy to share the papers.
But the death rate in the U.S. has stayed the same. I mean, the death rate compared to the people with cancer, because we're diagnosing all these people with you know, pseudo cancers or cancers that don't need to be treated. But the death rates have not changed.
No, the death rates have gone down by 4% a year since the introduction of PSA-based screening.
So, Dr. Gumela, in summary, is your main complaint that we have not used this test correctly and now we're trying to do away with it when we've never quite used it in the way it should have been used?
Correct. One of our challenges that we have with prostate cancer is that the time course of disease is exceedingly long, and that's one of our challenges. That's why the European study that showed a 20% reduction in prostate cancer, you didn't start to see that difference until about year 7 or 8. So anything we do, it takes us a long time to figure out how to do it better. We now have this data. The National Comprehensive Cancer Center Network now is working on revising their guidelines to use this data as a more effective way to help us guide PSA utilization. So my fear is that this blanket statement from all men from age 30 up until age 100 or greater is going to make this test unavailable to men, and that's what our big concern is.
So just to add one quick thing to my question.
Yeah.
Just to be clear, though, if you're going to have this discussion with men, you can't use that 20%. You need to use that 1,400 men need to be screened for 10 years for one death to be prevented and 49 to be treated unnecessarily, because that's the data. That's
and
the
well, that was
about.
And Dr. Merenstein, when that data first came out, when the paper was reported, that was the number. But as the years go on, that number needed to treat goes down and down and down.
We'll talk more in just a moment. I'll give both of you the chance to weigh in. We're talking about prostate cancer screenings, and a lot of people want to join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back with more discussion on this topic, which is obviously controversial, so be sure you stay tuned to Radio Times.
Center City Opera Theater supports WHYY and presents the world premiere of Slaying the Dragon, now through June 17th. Inspired by real events, Slaying the Dragon presents the story of the Grand Dragon of the KKK, whose life is transformed when a rabbi confronts his hatred. Slaying the Dragon is a powerful tale of redemption and forgiveness, and love's triumph over hatred. For tickets, 215-238-1555 or online at centercityoperatheater.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Noah Pippin survived 3 brutal tours in Iraq, but then went into the Montana wilderness and disappeared. What happened? Also, Tony-nominated Broadway star Tracy Bennett on taking on the role of Judy Garland, with so many who consider her an icon. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit have been studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders since 1964. They are currently performing research to develop improved treatments for people who experience periods of depression followed by uncontrollable shifts between highly energized and depressive moods. Initial evaluations are offered to determine those who are eligible for treatment. More about Penn's Depression Research Unit at 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mike and Scott in for Marty Moskowain, and we're talking about new guidelines on prostate cancer screenings with Jefferson University's Leonard Gomela and Daniel Merenstein of Georgetown University Medical Center. He's a researcher and also a family physician. And Dr. Merenstein, I do want to ask you this issue of testing, because across from me sits a man who is a specialist who sees people who come into his practice with a very specific problem and often a deadly problem. But from your side, as a family and primary care physician, the issue of testing, describe a bit about what you have to navigate in terms of talking to your patients about which tests to get, when it makes sense, when it doesn't make sense, not just the prostate cancer screen.
Yeah, and I think that's important. It's why the panel was set up by with primary care physicians. There's lots of tests. There's lots of screening. There's people that are worried about lung cancer and breast cancer and colon cancer, and you only have a limited amount of time. And what I try to stress with the people is the tests that have really been well proven. So if any 50-year-old walks into my office and hasn't had colon cancer screening, you know, we have a long talk about that because people are afraid to get that for lots of different reasons. And we talk about the importance. You know, a woman of certain age needs pap smears. Women of certain age need mammograms. And we really stress the importance of those kinds of screening, which have been shown to provide clear benefit and have limited morbidity.
And Dr. Merenstein, you've discussed openly that you have a personal relationship to this prostate cancer screen, in that you had a patient once who you discussed this issue with. Patient decided against the screen and then came back years later to sue you, correct?
Yeah, it was when I was a resident, so it was many years ago. But yeah, I was seeing a patient, and we documented that we discussed it, and the patient declined. And then another doctor, which is often happens now, just got the test without ever talking to the patient. And the patient had a Gleason 8, which Dr. Gomela will tell you is really untreatable. And it was, the data shows it would have been untreatable whenever we got it. But he didn't know that because of all this noise around it. Him and his family think that, you know, if he got the test earlier, he would have survived. And unfortunately, lots of doctors think that. And so we went to court, and unfortunately for the residency, they lost the case.
But for primary care physicians, it must be just so difficult because there are so many tests that we can do. It doesn't mean we should do them. However, for the one thing we miss, the cost is just so high.
Yeah, and the thing you need to understand is we've been talking about it for 40 minutes, and you know, me and Dr. Gomela don't even agree on it, you know, and we understand the issue. It's a difficult issue. You know, you have 15 minutes to talk with a patient. It's much, much easier to just check the PSA box and not discuss it with the patient. And that's why I don't think this is going to provide so much change in the next few years. Although more shows like this hopefully will provide some change.
All right. Well, let's get Nancy to weigh in. She's joining us on the phone from Wincode. Hi, Nancy. You're on Radio Times.
Hello, Mike. And
hello.
What an interesting discussion, and one that bears very heavily on my heart. My husband was diagnosed in his late 50s with prostate cancer. It was already metastatic. He died at the age of 62. One of the discussions our family never had was family history. And in talking late in his treatment, we discovered that not only did his father have prostate cancer, but both his grandparents had prostate cancer. What my fear is that the PSA will be done away with for the most part and just sort of ignored. I have a 28-year-old son now, and by the time he's 30, he should be tested for prostate cancer. The PSA, I think, is the test most indicated for that. I have no great assurity that my son will get the treatment he needs, should he need it.
Thank you, Nancy, so much for that call. Dr. Gamella, do you want to go first?
And then we'll Nancy, go. Terribly sorry for your loss of your hunger, or your husband at such a young age. The thing for your son is the future is very bright for us. We are making progress, and one would hope that by the time your son really needs to be concerned about this, as he gets into his little more senior years, that we'll have great ways to prevent prostate cancer, and that's one of the problems we have. Our best defense with prostate cancer is through early detection. We have no way to knowably prevent prostate cancer. But Nancy makes a wonderful point. This broad statement takes someone like her, with her and her family with very strong family history, and says, oh, forget about it. The PSA test is not good. And the literature shows that it is very effective in patients with a family history.
Dr. Merenstein, would you say Nancy's son should get the test? You're not totally against the test, correct?
No, I think the test should be available to patients. I don't think it should be illegal to get somebody put off the market. I think Nancy's son has to have a discussion with his physician and look at the numbers and see what the numbers are. We know that family history is blown a little bit out of proportion at times. We know that 30% of men in their 40s and then 40% of them in their 50s, it just keeps going up to have cancer. So, if people are going to start living to their 80s, 70% of men are going to have prostate cancer. So, it just matters what kind of cancer specifically that we're talking about. What kind of prostate cancer?
Yeah. One more point.
One more comment. Dan made a comment a minute ago that Gleason 8 cancer is untreatable, and that's absolutely not true. I don't mean to disrespectfully disagree with him. Those are the ones, though, that we want to find because they have the highest likelihood of becoming metastatic and becoming incurable. But we can effectively, lots of times we can treat Gleason 8 cancers effectively.
And how do you treat them? Surgery, radiation?
Again, a combination. Yeah. You need to really have a good multidisciplinary discussion about all of the different options that are out there and let the patient decide what's best for them.
All right. The data shows that it prolongs life, though.
I'll be happy to email you some articles after this is over, Dan. Thanks.
And I'll email you more back.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
it
you.
Looks like you'll be chatting amongst yourselves, which is good. And it looks like physicians, I'm glad for the opportunity to bring both of you to the table, because I'm wondering how often people get the chance to talk to each other, even in the medical field, when it's not through an editorial that's going to make somebody mad. So I'm glad we're actually having this conversation. And George wants to join us from Princeton, who is a general internist. So let's get George on Radio Times. Hi, George. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes, a general internist and a epidemiologist. And I think one of the issues here, having read the report, is the difference between population-based screening, that is screening everybody in the ballpark, and diagnostic testing. And what I hear the urologist saying is that there's a place to use this test for diagnostic testing for individual patients. But what the task force report and what most epidemiologists would say is that the test has been grossly overused as a population-based screen. And the population-based screen shows, and the task force report seems to say, that as many men or more men will die from complications after population-based screening, that will be saved. So that distinction, I think, needs to be put into perspective during the discussion.
Thank you so much for that call, George. Dr. Merenstein, do you want to weigh in?
I agree. In fact, I've really just been talking about, how many people are actually saved, but we even talked about the morbidity. 1 in 3,000 people who are going to die on the surgical table or the week after. Again, we talked about a little bit, 40-50%. Are going to have incontinence and impotence. I think the numbers said that 3 in 1,000 are going to have a heart attack or stroke from the treatment. So the treatments are dangerous. They're not benign.
As a surgeon, I can attest to what you're saying, Dan. When we take people to the operating room, we recognize there's a risk and a benefit, and you have to look at the risk and the benefit ratio of any patient when you decide if you're going to operate on them or treat them differently.
I want to ask both of you, in the mind of consumers, are they looking at these recommendations, or do they pay attention to what their friend Joe said about his friend Bob, who died from prostate cancer? So, a personal story is so much more powerful a lot of times than reading statistics or hearing 1 in 1,400. So what do you get from your patients, Dr. Gamella, and then Dr. Merenstein?
Yeah, there's no question that powerful personal stories can direct all aspects of healthcare, no matter what it is. Suzanne Summers with her things, Nancy Reagan with her things, have all been very influential in directing. So the media is also very important in telling stories. But it is important that a balanced story, and at the end of the day, this is all about an informed decision between the doctor and the patient. That's what's at risk here by this task force recommendation. If this goes through the Affordable Care Act, that ability for a patient to sit and have an informed discussion with their physician will forever be changed because the test may not be paid for.
Dr. Merenstein?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's, I agree with your point that this, what patients hear from their friends and families really influence them. And unfortunately, because they've been sold this for the last 20 years, is there's so many people out there walking around believing that the PSA saved their life when really it didn't save their life. They would have been just as better off, in fact, better off, never being treated for it, never knowing that they had cancer. So it's going to take many years, I think, for this to change. And hopefully by the time it's changing, maybe we will have a real test that really helps people.
We're hanging everything here on two nails, the PLCO and the European trial. That's what everything that Dr. Merenstein is really basing his discussion on. And if you look at the number of references, the initial draft paper from this Preventive Service Task Force talked about 48 papers. In their final recommendation, they cherry-picked 62 papers. There's many other papers out there, thousands of papers, that deserve a close look. When organizations such as the American Urologic Association come up with guidelines, they go through thousands of papers and reference what's good and bad about each paper. We're putting too much faith and trust in these two studies, which each have good things and bad things about them.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, unfortunately, it took the American Urologic Association 10 years just to say that, to agree with Dr. Gamelot that we should have a discussion before they said it should just be tested. And so that's the problem. The data wasn't there before. This data we finally were waiting for to see if it actually helped. And I was hopeful. Yeah, I mean, I have a male, I have a father, I have four sons. There's nothing I would like more than a good test. And I was hopeful that it would be positive.
Well,
but the tests were clear that it wasn't, and the previous studies have been clear that it hasn't shown any benefit.
So Dr. Merenstein and I do have something in common. We both have four sons. So
all right. There we go. So we will take another call from Mitchell. Hi, Mitchell. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hello.
First of all, I want to say Dr. Gamella and his team at Jefferson are excellent. I went there for treatment. And what they did was, I'm African-American, I need to say that. What they did was allow me to participate in my treatment. And they didn't rush me into surgery. They didn't tell me to do this until we discussed everything that I needed to do. And, you know, and my test during the wait and watch procedure that I was in. And then each time my numbers from my biopsy were going up. So then we decided to do the treatment. But I don't agree with not getting tested for prostate cancer. No one in my family ever had prostate cancer that I know of, but I got the test every year, and then it comes to find out I had it, and I wanted to be treated. And Dr. Gamella is correct. You need to do that, and Jefferson is a good place to go if you have that problem.
Thank you so much, Mitchell, for that call and for that perspective. And Dr. Okay, there we go. Sorry, it sounded like there was a noise in the background there for a moment. Dr. Merenstein, I'm wondering, we hear so much about defensive medicine. You mentioned earlier a lawsuit that was filed against your department when you were a resident. So how much of what doctors do on any level is motivated by the fear that something is missed and then the person comes back and sues them?
Yeah, those are hard studies to do to figure out, you know, why doctors are ordering it. You know, they're ordering it because of risk of suit, of financial interest. But I think it's a large risk. You know, I think, unfortunately, my piece got a lot of press, and a lot of physicians, a lot of family physicians say, you know, I don't want to not order because you can get sued, even if the evidence is you should discuss with the patient. So, and like I said, it's easier to order tests than to discuss with patients. Easier to order a CAT scan for a smoker to look for cancer than to talk about, you know, is it really worth it or not. So I think a lot of tests and are getting ordered for defensive medicine, unfortunately.
And let's acknowledge the fact that Dr. Merenstein and his associates in family and community medicine and primary care are the front line of this battle and at the front line of this discussion. So they have a lot of skin in the game when it comes to these decisions to get a PSA and then to move on to not move on to a biopsy. So they're really, their feet's on the fire every day on this.
And I want to talk before we go, how both of you, how important do you think or how valuable are these broad recommendations when it comes to a topic that seems to be very individual? And on some level, we're hearing so much about kind of individualized medicine and an approach with your physician, and then these broad recommendations come out. So, Dr. Merenstein, you go first. How important are these recommendations as a guideline for physicians, and what role should they play going forward?
Well, I think, unfortunately, for the last 20 years, we've just been ordering the PSA with very little discussion. I understand that, again, the American Urological Association, some people have said we should discuss it, but that really hasn't been happening. And so I hope that this will have discussion, that patients will think about it, and doctors will think about it. And it takes time. I think it's going to take 5 to 10 years. But I think it's important just for that alone.
Okay. Dr. Gamella?
Yeah, Dan, I think it's unfair to say it hasn't been happening, because it does happen. We do talk to patients about what to do. We have a multidisciplinary GU clinic at Jefferson. It's internationally renowned. We've been doing it since 96, and we see patients who we counsel about prostate cancer, and we present them with all the options. In that particular setting, they've already come in the door diagnosed. But to say that when we're in our regular office seeing people with elevated PSAs that we're not having a discussion, do you want a biopsy? If you have a biopsy, we may not treat your cancer. You know, to say it's not happening is kind of unfair, because
no,
it is.
No, I meant in the primary care office.
Well,
I
in the primary, okay, fair enough.
I don't
enough.
Know what's going on in the urology office.
Fair enough.
I have the most respect for Jefferson.
Yeah.
I'm a graduate of Jefferson. But I'm saying in the primary care office, it's much easier in your 15 minutes when you're doing everything else to just check the box. And
look, you guys in primary care have you know, we specialists are a little bit cloistered from some of these things, and we have the deepest respect for the challenge that you have. You've got cholesterol, smoking, accident prevention, all these things that you have to deal with, and it's not fair that it has to be all squeezed into such a short period of time. As a specialist, I have the opportunity to focus in on one topic. So I do have that recognized benefit when I counsel patients about this.
And just a few moments left, but it seems like as we have to think long and hard about allocating healthcare resources, these kinds of discussions, people are not going to be happy. There are always going to be people who say, well, this is no good, right, Dr. Merenstein? It seems like we're going to have to...
Yeah, now the important thing is that the task force, and I have not mentioned, this was not a financial decision. This was just based on, you know, the pluses and the minuses of the test. But
Philadelphia,
I think you're right.
Theater.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Dr. Gamella. I'll give you the last word. Any final comments on that, on just where we're going with these kind of recommendations and allocating resources?
We're learning better and better on how to utilize these screening, and much, much more importantly, the appropriate way to treat or not treat patients with prostate cancer.
Thank you both so much for your time and for your expertise on this difficult issue. Dr. Gamella is with the Department of Urology at Thomas Jefferson University and the Kimmel Cancer Center. We were also joined by Dr. Daniel Merenstein, an associate professor and director of research programs in the Department of Family Medicine at Georgetown University Medical Center. Thank you all for your calls and for your insight as well. You're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.